Money FM 89.3, the best of your money. Money and Me on Your Money, only on Money FM 89.3.
Does it feel a lot like 1999? Well, it does for Jeffrey Gundlach, one of the world's most famous investors, who says the AI craze stock market reminds him of the dot-com bubble. And so the billionaire is predicting sticky inflation and economic slump. And putting the red flag out for extreme valuations. What does my guest think? Cheng Chai-sen is head of investment at Provident. Good morning, Chai-sen.
Morning, Michelle.
All right, so the U.S. equity market started off on a surprising note this year. A couple of names have really stood out. NVIDIA, Micron, AMD. NVIDIA's been up 97%, AMD 29%. So we heard about Jeffrey Gundlach's views. Other strategists at Goldman Sachs say that actually this advance when it comes to the AI craze stock market doesn't actually resemble past bubbles. So let's hear your stand. Are we in a tech bubble of the likes that we saw back in 1999?
Thanks for the question, Michelle. I think every time we reach a new high in the stock market, there's always this question if a bubble is happening. However, if we take a step back this time, we can see that really it is just a couple of stocks that have been grabbing the headlines, but the broader market is still behaving quite reasonably. So, I mean, of course, NVIDIA and AMD, Meta have all been doing very well this year. But the equal weight S&P 500, that means, you know, it's not market cap weighted, but every single constituent has an equal weight in the index. So it's not really driven so much by these large stocks. It's only up around 6% so far this year. So we can see that the broader market is not really rallying as fast as just these few stocks. And even if you talk about tech, not all tech is doing so well. Apple is part of the Magnificent Seven, but it's actually down 7% this year for various reasons. So investors are actually being quite selective in which tech stocks they're buying specifically. So, I mean, maybe then the question can be, is there a bubble in AI stocks?
Right.
And you have a lot of crazy valuations that we are seeing right now, of course. But it's also hard to say because a lot of these valuations that we are seeing from NVIDIA, from AMD, for example, they're based on, you know, company guiding future earnings growth. It's a little bit different from before because previously it was, you know, in 1999, it was all sorts of any stock that had a .com in its name was just going up. Didn't matter whether they made money or not. But if you look at NVIDIA, AMD, they are making a lot of money and they're guiding that they'll be making a lot more money, which is why investors are sort of willing to pay more for their stocks right now. So, you know, it's really hard to say if it's the same or if we're in a bubble. However, definitely, you know, the AI stocks have gone up a lot. And as an investor, it's definitely something you want exposure to. But maybe it's better to just remember that we all cannot predict the future. So it's better to be a bit diversified because as an example, you know, not all AI is doing very well either because, you know, NVIDIA has been doing really well, of course. But, you know, Adobe, it's another tech company. They do a lot of very important software. Mm-hmm. They've been also focusing on trying to integrate some AI into their products. But, you know, their stock hasn't done so well because they guided a weaker future earnings, and so their stock fell around 10% after they announced their earnings recently. So, you know, it's quite important to just stay diversified, even in your AI exposure, and that's a good risk management strategy.
So the AI bubble is not in trouble in your view?
Not yet.
Not necessarily something to worry about just yet. That's a fantastic overview. Let's take a look now and pivot to the Fed. All right. According to recent FOMC meeting minutes that detailed the central bank's rate trajectory for the rest of this year, what are you seeing in terms of the likely direction of interest rates for the rest of 2024? Let's start there.
Yeah, I think the key thing is that the Fed hasn't really changed their projections too much for 2024. And that actually includes something like 3 rate cuts possibly. So despite the recent inflation data having some uptick, they do sort of still maintain that they are going to cut rates 3 times this year. But I think what has slightly changed, although it's not 2024, is that they expect that the long run rate to be a bit higher in 2025. That means they might make these 3 cuts, but they probably won't cut any more after that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
So what we are seeing right now in the futures market is a 60% probability that we might see the first rate cut in June. And so, I mean, if you want to put a number to it, if it's 3 cuts, it's probably around 75 basis points at least of rate cuts that's going to happen, you know, from June onwards. And a lot of this, of course, will depend on the data that's coming out, especially on the economy. If the economic data comes out a lot worse and the recession's on the cards, then it's possible that rates might come down even further. But if we see the economy still doing well, asset prices continue to go up. I mean, the stock market is at an all-time high. It's hard to imagine that the Fed will cut rates very aggressively. So I think one of the key things investors might want to keep a lookout for is employment data, because the Fed has expressed that's one of the key indicators that might make them consider more cuts. So if the employment data weakens drastically, then the Fed might be more concerned about a recession or more concerned about maintaining employment, and then we might see more than a 75 basis point cut. But if employment data continues to come out looking very robust, then I think we are likely to just see what the Fed has been projecting so far.
So just to sum up, the rate cut will continue to hinge on inflation data.
And from employment data.
Employment data.
Maybe employment data.
Mainly employment data. Some also say because inflation readings for the first 2 months of the year came in hotter than expected, that shows, you know, sticky price pressures in certain sectors. Do you think stubborn prices in terms of personal consumption expenditures, for example, CPI, are also areas that investors may want to pay attention to?
Yes, definitely. So the Fed does have a dual mandate. One is controlling inflation. One is trying to maintain employment. So, you know, they were talking a lot about the employment part of it. I think mainly because we have seen that the rate hikes have brought the inflation numbers down.
Right.
They have not come down to 2% yet, which is their preferred sort of target. Right? They're sort of soft targeting 2%. But we expect that the Fed knows, and the Fed also probably knows, that getting that last 1%, like from 3% down to 2%, will take some time. It will also be a bit bumpy on the way. So I think while they are looking at cutting rates a bit, I think the fact that they are guiding that the long run rate might be a bit higher in 2025, I mean, the eventual rates might be a bit higher in 2025 and beyond, means that they probably do understand that they don't want to cut too much, because they know that they are still not at their inflation target of 2% yet. And if they maintain that target, they would have to keep the rates at a bit higher than usual. But I think what they're probably seeing, or they're probably worried about, is that if they keep it at above 5% for too long, that will also be too much of a drag on certain parts of the economy. And that's something that they're also trying to navigate. So it's definitely a tricky balancing act. But so far, they have managed to tame inflation without causing a recession, and the stock market's at all-time high. So I guess they have done a pretty good job so far, and we'll see what happens later in the year. But a lot of it is data dependent.
It is data dependent. Pat on the backs for the job done so far for the Fed. Let's switch to the economies of Europe and Japan. So the Swiss National Bank announced a surprise cut to interest rates, a sign of confidence over falling inflation. The SNB, or the Swiss National Bank, reduced its headline rate by 25 basis points to 1.5%, the first central bank of a major Western industrialized country to do so. What did you think when you heard of this rate move by SNB?
Yeah, it was definitely a bit of a surprise there, but I think it does highlight that the challenges of economic growth in Europe and Switzerland. I think, you know, despite the stock market, they're actually doing pretty well. European stocks are also at all-time highs. The Swiss economy, I think, though small, is very linked to Europe. And so there does seem to be a slowdown in Europe due to the continued Ukraine war, and also because Europe has been a very big trading partner for China. And of course, China is also facing its own challenges right now. So, I mean, with all these factors, I think what we can see is that, you know, the European economy is probably showing some signs of slowing down. And the SMB, with that, with the slowdown, you know, the inflation numbers have come down. I think they're also concerned that the economy would stall too much. So they probably decided to act proactively and have a surprise rate cut. I think the interesting thing is that the economy is not the stock market. Stock market in Europe is still doing pretty well, led by the granola stocks. If you've heard of them, it's a term coined by Goldman Sachs. But you know, these 11 stocks have been leading the European market. GSK, Roche, ASML, the Dutch chip equipment manufacturer, Nestle, Novartis, Novo Nordisk, L'Oreal, LVMH, AstraZeneca, and SAP, Sanofi. And so, you know, the key is to understand that despite maybe just one region slowing down, Europe might be slowing down, but a lot of these stocks are global corporations. So they're not just exposed to Europe, but to other regions of the world that are doing better. So it's not just about looking at economic data as an investor and directly extrapolating that to stock performance of a market, but you know, we're all investing in companies and we need to look at what the companies are actually doing and understanding that, and then making investment decisions based around fundamentals, of course.
Yeah, I was reading an interesting article from Morningstar about Europe's Magnificent Seven, arguing that the granola stocks, or Europe's leading stocks, are not only profitable, but they're cheaper than the other stocks that have hogged the headlines, mainly based in the US stock markets. I'm not going to ask you for your view on that. Don't worry. I think we can switch to Japan in terms of handling of interest rates. So quite a contrast, right? Bank of Japan ending 8 years of negative interest rates with its first interest rate hike in 17 years. So when you look at what's happening in Japan and the reversion when it comes to interest rates, what does this mean for investors?
Yeah, it's definitely a very interesting dichotomy that's happening right now. And what's happened in Japan is quite a monumental shift, even though, of course, the move was widely telegraphed and expected by investors. But, I mean, it's sort of really a big shift in thinking across central banks, and it signals the end of negative interest rates across the world. I think, as we can all imagine, negative interest rates are quite confusing because you really get charged for holding on to cash. And that's something very foreign, right, in finance, that you should have some kind of return for a proper financial asset. But, you know, their growth was so anemic in places like Japan, Europe, even Switzerland, that they had to move to negative rates, you know, for during that era in the 2010s. And they were really trying to get investors to take more risk. But, you know, I guess a good thing is that, you know, with Japan being finally being the last to exit negative interest rates, it does signal that all the reforms in Japan, the inflationary pressures, the changes they've been trying to make, they can really move away from all these policies that they've been pursuing for decades of low interest rates. But it does mean that Japan growth does look like it's picking up. They're looking at, you know, they have had wage rises across most corporations in the company. Also recently, they've been working to improve corporate governance in the stock market. And then we can see that the Nikkei is, you know, now at a new all-time high. So I think a lot of these things are good news for Japan. And while there might be some volatility ahead, particularly in the yen, it does mean that at least they are confident enough to raise rates and to hopefully move to a new paradigm. And what that means is also we might start to see the yen make some moves against other currencies if the BOJ, you know, move rates even higher.
All right, now let's tie it all together. Now that we've understood the potential rate cut roadmap for the rest of this year, your view of it, Chai-Sun, what does this mean for investors? How can we position our equity and fixed income portfolios?
I think that's really the question on everyone's minds all the time. And one of the most direct impact of a rate cut by the Fed, if it hasn't already been priced into the market, is that in general, you know, you would see stocks rise because the discount rate used to value companies would have come down. I mean, as one of the valuation methods is to discount future cash flows of a company. So if the discount or hurdle rate is lower, it just makes the company value go up as long as cash flows remain the same. It's also going to benefit fixed income. I mean, we all saw what happened in 2022. Fixed income had a very difficult time when rates went up. So rates going down is going to have the opposite effect. We'll see bond prices go up. It does mean that yields will come down, so future returns on bonds will be lower. But for current investors in fixed income, you know, bond prices will go up and they will see some capital gains. So I think the key thing for investors is definitely to consider their current asset allocation, particularly if they are sitting on cash. And really, who isn't these days? Because, you know, the cash rates are the highest they've been for years and everyone has been taking advantage of that, and rightfully so. But, you know, with the Fed does bring rates down, that's likely to lead to, you know, rates coming down, even in Singapore, because of the interest rate parity. And what will happen is that our cash rates might come down a bit. So that means that investors really need to think about, okay, if my cash rate come down, is that still going to give me a return that I am satisfied with, that something that I can still meet my financial goals with? And then so it becomes a question of how much risk an investor wants to take, and should they consider allocating more to fixed income for certainty or to equity for a higher return. And fixed income will still, of course, provide a good yield, possibly some upside depending on the magnitude of the rate cuts. And fixed income is far less volatile. And yes, you know, people are going to say 2022 fixed income was very volatile, but yes, overall fixed income is the less volatile asset. And if you need certainty and you don't want to be, you know, waking up in the middle of the night wondering what's going on in your stock portfolio, having more fixed income will help with that, but it will give you lower returns. But if you want, you know, much higher returns and you need the higher returns to achieve your goals, they should be thinking about moving maybe from cash to a diversified global equity portfolio to get equity-like returns. And of course, they have to be prepared for that volatility in the process. So I think, you know, look at your current asset allocation. If, you know, you're holding a lot of cash and if you feel that you're probably going to need a higher return if rates come down, then it's a good time to talk to an advisor to decide if you should be moving more towards fixed income or to equity.
Fantastic overview of strategy when it comes to fixed income, which, as you say, is on everybody's minds. So we really appreciate your thoughts, Chaisen. Have a good day ahead. I have about 5,000 more questions. I think we've got quite a bit here as it is. Is there anything else you'd like to leave our listeners with?
No, I just, you know, make sure you have a plan and stay invested, I guess.
Yeah, that's always evergreen points. Thank you very much. He's Cheng Chaisen, Head of Investment at Provident. We've covered so much today. Are we in a tech bubble? Where are global economies moving in terms of interest rates? And how, as an investor, can you be positioning yourself when it comes to these market shifts? You're with me on Money and Me. I'm Michelle Martin. Thank you for your company.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio, at the App Store and Google Play.